We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You're listening to From the Chair, and I'm your host, Mike Hamilton. Join us each episode as we talk to athletic directors from across America. We're going to talk about topics like leadership, career development, issues of the day, and I can promise you we're going to have some fun along the way, too. So sit back, listen in, and let's dive in. Let's go.
All right, welcome into today's episode. Longtime friend, Ward Manuel, the athletic director at the University of Michigan. Ward, thanks for being with me.
Mike, it's great to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. It has been a long time, right? I remember us sitting in NCAA committees and maybe things, long time ago. I think maybe when you were first at University of Buffalo or maybe even before that when you're at Michigan the first time. So a lot of history together. And it's funny. Yeah. I was reading some articles in preparation for our conversation, and there was an article related to your time at UConn where Jim Calhoun referred to you as a no BS guy. And so I know this will be a good 25 or 30 minutes here as we walk our way through the day. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, I remember that comment, and coming from Coach Calhoun, that is a high honor.
No doubt, man. No doubt.
He's not able,
well, so you're a Michigan man, Ward, and I think it's interesting. Obviously Michigan is obviously a national brand. And, a lot of people probably know this, but maybe some don't. You're actually originally from New Orleans area. And we can probably extrapolate and figure out what the story might say. But tell us how you ended up at the University of Michigan from New Orleans, Louisiana.
Well, I can sum it up with one name, Bo. He came down. I was had the luxury of having options to where I wanted to go, but my mom and dad and I were really impressed with Bo, with his character, with his leadership, with the way that he talked about what was important. And obviously that was a combination of athletics and academics, and no shortcuts there. And that he wanted me to grow into a young man like my parents would want me to be. Those are the three things that I first talk to any recruit or student athlete about to this day. He said it in such a way that it meant it really resonated with me and my parents. We never forgot that home visit. And I went up to Michigan. I went to other places. And as we talked about it, when I was making my decision, We were able to eliminate different places and then get it down to the top two. And then that is really what came to bear is the way he talked about caring about his student athletes. I saw that when I came to campus and met the guys on the team. And it really impacted me. On top of that, you know, great academics, great athletics, in my opinion, one of the best combinations in the country to do both at a high level, very highly ranked in both the academic side and athletic side, and a long history in both, having excellence and success in, you know, at both. And so all those reasons, I came back in here in 1986 and made my decision, I think still exists today.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't planning on talking about Bo, but I do have to ask you a question now that you brought his name up, and I know he's instrumental to who you are today. I always find it interesting to study, you know, great leaders, you know, iconic coaches, let's call them legends, and certainly his name is right there at the top when you start talking about college football. You know, in your time around him, what you've seen leaders, you've been around leaders even in today's world, what stood out with him that led to his success?
Integrity, his belief in doing things the right way, and pushing you to make sure that there are no shortcuts. There's no cheating. There's just you having to do the work, and then competing against others and seeing if you can have success. And that was important to him. That was paramount to what he taught us. And how he's led us was about that and about character, and that you are a representative. What you do represents who you are. How you do things is a representation of who you are. And so always carry yourself with high character, and always work hard and do things the right way. And so for that, you know, I will always have those lessons with me. And it wasn't far from what my dad taught me. You know, my dad was a sergeant in the Army for 8 years, served during the Korean War times. And those were the same lessons that he taught that were important growing up. And so it was really a connection between both of them that I try to, you know, we're all fallible. We all make mistakes in life, and nobody's perfect, and neither were either Bo or my dad, but it's that effort to try to do it. It's recognizing when you fall short that you have to get up and work at doing things the right way again. And that's always lived with me for my entire life.
Were you, I can't remember, were you and Coach Harbaugh teammates during that time?
For 1 year, he was captain my freshman year in 1986.
Okay.
Actually, over my head right there.
Okay.
Is a picture of him and Kolasar, and great combination that they were back then. But yeah, he was quarterback my senior year, captain of the team, led us to the Big Ten championship into a Rose Bowl. So he was, I thought very highly of him then, very respected, was great leader of the team. And I see a lot of what he did as a captain in how he leads our team now.
Well, that's where I want to go next. You know, I sent you a note last summer, or maybe we even talked live about it. I can't remember now, where you and Jim, you know, visited and you know, restructured his contract in a small way, I guess you call it. Maybe some would say a large way, but I thought it was in a creative way. Let me say it that way. And yeah. I think in a very a thoughtful way, in a forward-thinking way. And there were some parts of that you can say, you know, really, really spoke a lot to leadership and how you care about your coach, but at the same time, making sure you're protecting the program, and also vice versa, how your coach cares about your institution. And then you guys went out and really performed at a, you know, high level, had a great season. And I'm curious, to the point you can share, you know, just the thought process as you went through that and why it mattered to you to make sure that you handle all that in the correct manner. And you know, with hindsight, did it accomplish a lot of what you thought you would hope to accomplish?
Well, listen, I have a tremendous respect for Jim, as I talked about earlier, dating back to 1986. And he means a lot to me personally. He means a lot to this athletic department and to this university. And so in looking at a restructured way of putting his contract together, I did not want him in that sense to be harmed, particularly if he achieved success. And it was really, it wasn't a top down. It wasn't me saying, this is what you're going to get and this is what you got to accept. We had a great conversation that led to that structure of that deal. And I'm proud to say, you know, it was that way in the conversation that it came out. And, you know, I suggested it and laid it on the table. We talked about it and worked through it, similar to how we did his new contract this year. So I just believe those conversations have to occur. I believe I need to have those conversations with my coaches, with my direct reports, not through an agent, not negotiating with somebody else on or having somebody negotiate, you know, lawyer to lawyer, and have those conversations. And it worked out because I think both of us knew we cared about each other and we cared about the department and wanting to make sure that we did things the right way and balanced it out for everybody. So I commend Jim for a great conversation as well. And it worked out great.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I didn't intend to do it that way. It wasn't a motivational ploy or anything else. And I give Jim 100% of the credit, his staff and his student athletes, 100% of the credit for working hard, for putting the game plan together, for executing and bringing home a Big Ten championship for us for the first time since 2005. And so there's zero credit taken from me. I was glad to play a small part in supporting the program and in doing the things that helped them to be successful. But that wasn't the reason we did it. But the outcome was terrific. I mean, the outcome was great for the season. And I'm really proud of Jim, his staff, and especially his student athletes.
Yeah, man, that's a great result for sure. Yeah, so the theme of this conversation is going to be a lot about Michigan. I'll talk about some contemporaneous issues when we get toward the end, but this is very Michigan-centric, if I could stay on that theme for a minute. Sure. You know, I'm a big believer that having the right people alongside you in leadership plays a big role in your success, and there are a lot of people that you have on your team at Michigan that lead to your success as an athletic director, just as I had that at Tennessee. And I look back and think about in my time in external relations at Tennessee, it was John Curry and Jim Phillips. You know, then John left, came back. Jim left to go to Notre Dame. John Curry was then alongside of me for a long time. Desiree Reed-Francois. After that, others, Mark Ingram, Chris Fuller, et cetera, et cetera. David Blackburn, Gary Wyatt. For my association with you, I can't talk to you without thinking about your success, and that success also aligned with Doug Yanaki. You know, I know Doug was I think with you when you were at Michigan originally, and then followed and went with you to Buffalo and UConn and Michigan. And if I understand the story correctly, there was even the possibility that you were going to encourage him to stay at UConn maybe as the athletic director. And he said, no, I made it back to Ann Arbor with you. Yeah. I think he's a special guy. I call him the ward whisperer. You know, and I think that's, by the way, that's probably a pretty important thing to have, a ward whisperer. Right. And, you know, sometimes a camera.
I also have one at home, too, by the way, my wife. She doesn't whisper all the time, though.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you a chance to spread a little love here related to the impact that Doug's had on your career.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned that you've had great success, you know, with your staff and bringing in leaders who you trusted and you gave support to look how they've grown. Many of those who you named are athletic directors. Jim Phillips is now commissioner of the ACC. That speaks to you and you helping them grow and learn. And I try to do the same. Doug was hired here in our student athlete development area. At the time it was called STARS when he was fresh out of college. And it was a program that was underneath me, and I got to know him. gave him more responsibility because he earned it. He's a hard worker. He's conscientious. He cares about the products that he produces and the things that he's responsible for. And so when I left here to go to Buffalo, he was assisting me at, he grew to starting to assist me with football and basketball administration and hockey when I had it, in some of the other areas. And so when I went to Buffalo, maybe I was there for 3-4 months, and Doug was working on his MBA, and I realized that I needed his help in terms of how I was thinking about Buffalo, and called him and asked him if he would come and think about being an assistant or athletic director, CFO. And he said, yeah, let me check, I'll finish my MBA, try to finish in 4 months, because he was part-time up until that point, which he did. And then he told me, he said, I can't start till July 1st. I go, why? You're graduating in the beginning of May. He goes, because I want to go to Australia and New Zealand and hike for like, I don't know, he did it for like 6 weeks or something. And I was like, man, what? You know, I have to wait till July? You know, that would be 11 months after I started. So I said, all right, man, whatever. You know, just get here. So he started July 1st, and I paid him back because I went on vacation on June 30th. So when he started without me being there.
So, I thought the story was going to be he took that time off, and you've never let him have a day off since. I thought that was the story.
Exactly. But he's been terrific because, to your point, I've never used the term ward whisperer. But what Doug really does is I think gets people, and this is probably in your leadership, when you have people close to you, they can explain and help people understand what's important to you as a leader, how to approach it, how to do things, help, you know, sort of structure things well before it gets to my desk. So that by the time I get to talk about it, there's a few questions, but it's presented in a way and organized in a way that he knows I like to see things. And he knows what pretty much what, with 99% certainty, what I like and what I don't, and what I might like and what I won't. And so I think he's very helpful in getting people to be calm about it, because he explains. And I didn't ask him to do that. He's just been a beneficiary. And then he's so smart. Tells me what I don't want to hear, which I think for your listeners is a critical piece. Doug and I have a relationship such that Doug tells me what I don't want to hear. And he's the person who usually gets the frustration about something more than before anybody else gets it. Because he's the one who will come to me with thoughts and ideas, knowing full well that I might be on the other side of the argument. But what I do is I listen to him and respect him and respect my other staff. Don't get me wrong. I respect their opinions as well. But he has the strength and the knowledge of me to be strong when others may say, I don't want to argue with or debate with the boss. Doug will continue to do it, and I love him for it. Great family, great person. I'm going to lose him one day because he'll make a great AD, you know, should he choose to apply to different places and go that route. But it would be a huge loss to me, and I would love to see him in that capacity. But he's doing a tremendous job. I would not have the success personally or professionally without Doug.
Yeah, he means that much. Count me as a fan, man. I think the world of him. I do think you make an excellent athletic director. You know, I say this kind of jokingly, tongue in cheek, but I don't know if we've got our multimedia rights deal done without Doug.
There was a couple of tense moments there too. He helped us all work through that, right? I mean, that's
right. That's yeah, what he did. yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, hey, look, here's the thing. When folks listen to this, hopefully they will listen to the previous week's podcast, too, which I've interviewed Scott Dolson from Indiana. And I talked to Scott about, you know, protection of iconic brands, right? IU basketball is an iconic brand. You talk about the University of Michigan, you're talking about iconic brand. I mean, I'm talking about broad-based success. Obviously, a lot of folks, you know, start with Michigan football, but the success that you guys have had across the board for a long, long time is noted, right? So you've got to – you've got a Michigan guy in the chair that I'm talking to. You got a Michigan guy coaching football. You got a Michigan guy coaching basketball. All that matters, and in the sense of how much I know the brand, the school, the history means to each of the three of you in particular. How do you feel pressure? I guess is the right way to say it, to protect the Michigan brand, or what do you do fundamentally every day to say, hey, I'm going to work today because this matters to me. It's more than just the day-to-day part of this. It's a bigger thing to me, right? Well, protecting iconic brands, I guess, is the line of question I'm trying to you know, pose to you.
First of all, I'm a fan of Scott Dolson. I think he's awesome leader at Indiana, great colleague to me.
Yeah.
And I saw a snippet of it last week, and I thought, he did an excellent job, and so pleased to follow him. But, you know, Michigan is 205 years old. And, you know, while we've been playing athletics for almost 150 of those years, this is an institution with a long history of excellence dating back to 1817. For the university and for all that it means to so many, for our alums, we have over 600,000 alumni. This is a place that really believes in striving for excellence. We achieve it in many different ways. We miss, come up short at times, but it's that quest for excellence and to be the best that across the board that is Michigan's brand. To have us in this leadership means we understand that. We understand what this brand and this Block M means and what the history and who came before us and what they mean. I have Cassie Russell right here up on the wall as, you know, in basketball. It's one of the guys who just lives and, you know, he's immortal in that sense. I mean, he's still living, but... he's in our history, one of those keys and key people, you know, and there's that way in all of our sports, from Yost to Chrysler to, you know, Howard and Woodson and, you know, all of the greats that have come in that sport. I mean, I can go on and on to Willis Ward and others. Gerald Ford, former president, played center here. And so there's so many, and we talked about Bo, that have gone through. In my opinion, in almost all of our sports, that excellence exists from student athletes and coaches who have gone. I mean, I think of Carol Hutchins, who is the winningest coach in softball history, and Red Berenson and the championships he won as a player and then as a coach. I mean, you know, that wall behind me is just a small portion of the tremendous success that we've had here. And that only represents the excellence from 86 to 90. And so there's a lot here and it means a lot. It burns in us. It's not just there. You know, it's something that lights that fire, Mike. And I have 3 degrees from Michigan, and I will always have Michigan and the protection of Michigan athletics and this university, you know, first and foremost, because that is what's going to carry on through history, past me, past anybody who's coaching or student athlete now. That greatness will continue and is expected, whether one day I'm going to retire and one day I'm not going to be here. And I expect that to continue with whoever is fortunate enough to be selected to sit in this chair.
Your picture will be up on the wall in that one, right? So that'll be great. Hey, I told you I want to talk a little bit about, let's call it how you handle situations that can rise to the level of, some people call them crisis, some people call them, you know, other things or whatever. You had the situation this past winter with a circumstance where in the handshake line, and I told you I didn't want to get into the details of that at all. Yeah. I'm more interested in the notion of coming out of that. One of the things that continues to be highlighted to me is the number of people in the public space that want to be, let's call it, immediately reactionary. They want heads to fall within minutes, right? Right. And just as it relates to considering the different levels of circumstances and a leadership role, how do you go about being methodical and thorough and arriving at decisions that you believe, given your position and the things you care about, and we've talked about the things you care about already here, and there are many more things, to deliver what are the right decisions around circumstances as leaders when you are the one that has more information than the public, right? You know more about circumstances and people than the Twitter universe does, Instagram, Facebook, yada, yada, yada. You know, so this is a leadership question as much as it is anything else. And so I'm curious, knowing that there are immense pressures to be, again, immediately reactive to circumstances, how do you step back from that and make sure that you do proper due diligence around critical decisions that you have to make as an athletic director?
Well, you know, first and foremost, good and great people make mistakes, Mike. I talked about that earlier. You know, nobody's perfect. And I don't approach people that way. I try to understand what happened and why it happened from a person's perspective prior to making any final decision. But to your point, I do step back. I do think about it. I try to put myself in the shoes of the person who I'm talking to and understanding what happened. I do put myself in a position to try to think about the impact on the institution, the team, the sport, before making a final decision. And I assess the situation in the context of not only who it is, but where it is, how it happened, what were the circumstances around it, and have a conversation with the person. I don't lead by social media. Never will. Monitor it. People tell me about it. They let me know. But that's not leadership, in my opinion. That's polling and making a decision based on, well, how many people say I should do X and how many people say I should do Y, and then making a decision. That's not what I feel I'm paid to do. I'm paid to analyze, to think, to understand the impact on a particular team, if it happens in a team or this department or a university, and make a decision, whether it's a staff person who's a coach or staff or a student athlete. All these things don't happen in the vacuum, and you just have to think through. You have to consult with the right people who will help you think through it. And you have to communicate and talk to the people or the person or the people involved before, you know, finalizing any decision. And that's how that worked. That's how that came out. When you do that and you come to a decision, it's better understood by those who are impacted. Once the decision was made, because I know you talked about teaching leadership, I spoke personally with the coaching staff and the staff separately, and then the coaching staff and the student athletes together to explain and answer any questions. Why? Because those are the people that are most affected by your decision. And I thought it was important for me to make myself available and explain and answer any questions that they had as a group, because nobody else was going to be more affected than that group of people. And so my leadership style is to step up and explain, answer any question, deal with any comments or feelings about it, in an effort to try to get everything on the table to those who are the most affected people about decisions, particularly when it happens, you know, to a head coach or a person on the leadership team who's responsible for many staff. I just think it's critical not to hide. You can't hide, and if you don't answer questions, if you don't present decisions, there'll be more water cooler talk about the decision and what should have happened. And so that's how I explain it. And look, great person. He's a great person, a great man, and a great leader. And nobody was more disappointed than he was, and he did a tremendous job in the time away. Did a tremendous job coming back in the way he talked about it when he talked to the media before his first game back. I told him how proud I was of him. I told him how much I appreciated the way he took the time in those 2 weeks and thought through and handled things the way he talked to the media, the way he talked to his team. And it meant a lot to me. I think the world of it.
That's tremendous feedback, Ward. Great content, great leadership lessons, great support. Your institution, trying to read the circumstances, read your employees, all that's good, really good stuff. I'll call it a softball question. After I ask, you're going to say it wasn't a softball question. And then I want to ask you a couple questions about New Orleans. Transfer portal, NIL, collective, you're on the CFP committee, you're the athletic director of one of the iconic brands in history, you know, social unrest, political unrest, war in Ukraine, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of that happening around us. How should someone who maybe is just an observer from the outside looking in feel about the future? I won't say college athletics. I'll say about the future of college football based upon all those things. And I know we could do a whole podcast on this, by the way. So I'm really just kind of looking for where you sit in perspective as you try to measure all the things in the world around us and considering the long storied history of college football. How do you feel about everything right now?
Let me say something. You know, what happened yesterday down in Texas puts all of the things we do in sports in context.
Yeah.
It puts it in the context of it's sports. It's not life or death. And so for me, I think college football is going to be fine. I think it's going to continue to be a great sport, just like our other sports that we participate in. Because in the context of some of the things that you mentioned, the war in Ukraine, the countless, I think, you know, 221 shootings in this country that involved multiple people either shot or killed. Mm. We haven't had that many days in a year yet. That is more important than what we do in the fields of play. Mm. When we play the game, we play the game to win. We want to do that. We want to prepare and we want to do it hard, but that's not life, Mike.
Yeah.
You know, the president of the university had to send out a letter to the university. I sent out a letter with some of my staff, giving people access and reminding them about the access to help because of that. You know, people in my life in Buffalo were affected indirectly because people were killed in Buffalo and their friends of their children were affected by the devastation in Buffalo. College football is going to be fine.
Yeah,
we're going to play games. Our fans are going to show up. It's a way to get away from all of that. But I remind people that in the context of what we're dealing with in this world, some of the ways that people talk about whether or not a kid misses a pass or fumbles or we lose a game is ridiculous, given the context that we live our lives in. This is not life or death. Football games, as you know, someone's going to win. Someone's going to lose. Rarely do we have sports anymore that end in a tie, except soccer.
Yeah. You know, there were a couple weeks ago, Jamie Pollard had commented on, you know, the Carnegie Foundation study from 1929 that said that, you know, or student athletes versus students. Coaches are overpaid. Does there need to be congressional involvement? And this is 1929, right? And somehow we've survived all that. And to your point, there's so much good about this, and it is entertainment. It's a game. It's education. It matters. It matters. But it's but in the context of the broader scope, there are things that have that should help us gain perspective on it, right? So
The only thing the NCAA has done or said that I say is right on target is when they say 98% of our student athletes will go pro in something other than sports. And that's the context of what sports means in this society to me, in this university, and what we do, and what we do at all our universities across America. We educate. We educate first. We play games. And ultimately, when those games are not going to be played anymore by the individuals who participated, they go on in society and make a difference because of the education that they've earned. And in most cases, were paid for, but not in all cases. Yeah. 450 of our 900 athletes, almost half, pay their own way to this university. And they value both. And our student athletes who are paid for also value both, don't get me wrong. But it's a way for people to understand that that education is really what drives the strength of what we do in our in our athletic departments, and particularly in our university.
That's great stuff, man. All right, quick lighthearted wrap up here, and then we'll get you back to all the things that I know you're doing today. New Orleans, I want to ask you to comment on food in Ann Arbor, because I don't want to get you in trouble with any of your local favorites. But if I think about New Orleans, I think of food, right? So again, rapid fire. If I had to say muffaletta or po' boy, what's your choice?
Po' boy, hot sausage.
All right, yeah. How do you like your oysters, raw or grilled or roasted?
Any way they come, I love
any way they come. Gumbo, jambalaya, or etouffee?
Gumbo.
Gumbo. All right.
I just think you can do more with gumbo than you can with jambalaya or crawfish etouffee. There's so many different ways to make it and what you put in it.
Okay, last one. Look, there are a lot of great places to eat in New Orleans. What's Ward Manuel's go-to?
My sister's house.
That's a politically correct answer, right?
Now, you know what? Listen, I tell you what, there's so many great places. You mentioned oysters. I love Acme, Oyster House, or Drago's. You talk about, you can get great gumbo all over the city. Yeah. You can go to Commander's Palace, and you can get some great food there. You can there's so many places to go in New Orleans. I prefer the mom and pops, the places. Cereal's Po' Boy is a great place that I go to all the time. I know Mike and does a great job with his Po' Boy. So for me, you can't go wrong. And every time I go to New Orleans, particularly now after Katrina, and that happened in 2005, there's so many different restaurants now. Many of the restaurants either closed up after Katrina or changed names or changed ownership. But there's so many great restaurants in New Orleans. I encourage people to go. It's a great city to visit, enjoy. It's one of the acronym. One of the things I talk about with my staff is the last thing I mentioned. I mentioned academics, athletics excellence, both of those, growing as young people, doing everything within the rules. And I say the fifth one is have fun. And I say, because I'm from New Orleans, I understand the value that having fun, creates. It doesn't mean easy. It just means you're going to enjoy the process in what you do. You're going to smile. You're going to dance. I mean, if you look at Big Blue right here, he's got beads. He's got Mardi Gras beads around his neck. It just it reminds me of home. It reminds me of the joy that New Orleans brings to me and my life. But pushed me hard and made me who I am today, along with my parents and family and friends. And it's, I'm a child of the city and love it every time I go back.
And look, man, you've been awesome to take some time out of your schedule to visit with me today. I hope you know this, but I'll say it in a public environment. Yeah, I've always considered you one of my friends in this industry and have enjoyed our time together on so many different occasions. And we've had a lot of fun together through the years and shared a million stories, and we're going to keep doing that. So thanks for taking the time to be with me
today. Yeah, I think the same of you, Mike. Thank you for having me, and all the best to you and everybody who's listening.
All right. True pleasure. All right. You've been listening to From the Chair. I'm your host, Mike Hamilton. We are available to you to listen to on all your audio podcast platforms every Wednesday morning. And you can also watch the video content on YouTube. We hope you'll do that each and every Wednesday morning. I thank Ward Manuel, my friend from the University of Michigan, for being with us today. I have no doubt that you have learned some key lessons today from our guy, Ward. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you next time.